So I didn't plan anything specific. What I'd like to do is you can either tell me what you want me to talk about or ask questions. Okay. And the reason I do it that way is because then I will speak about what interests you. Yeah. Whereas if I just dream up something, maybe it's not what you need. So you help me out by asking questions, telling me what you want to know about. Okay?
My two children, she's 12, he's 9. So I think we are at this age where I've been discovering the attractiveness of a phone.
Oh, you mean that thing that's glued to their hand? Oh.
So I realized that one can be very addictive, especially when they're discovering their friends or sometimes at school work. So how do you advise them to draw a balance?
Excellent question. I think a lot of parents have that question. I think one thing is to what my niece does is she says this much time online and that's it. Yeah. And collects the devices afterwards so that the kids don't keep the things in their room. Yeah. But they take it out when, you know, they need to look something up. They need to know something. Yeah. Because being online and always checking what your friends say, what your friends are doing, this and that, then you get really distracted from what's important in life. So, yeah. To know that the phone looks interesting, but it can actually take up a lot of your time, and a lot of what people say on it doesn't really matter. It's kind of stupid stuff, yeah. And so you need to be really wise and just use it, you know, when you want to look something up, when it's something interesting. And you don't need to pay attention to all the things that your friends write and what so and so ate for breakfast. Yeah, all these important things, huh? Yeah, really interesting what your friends ate for breakfast. But, you know, just focus on what's important. Yeah. And then your mom and dad can set times when you can go online and they can help you. Learn how to use the phone to look up things that interest you. Okay? So if you're interested in dinosaurs, are you interested in dinosaurs? No? Really? Yeah, are you?
La bombe.
No? A la bobo. It's a boo-boo. Yeah, you know what boo-boo is? Means mistake. Yes. So, yeah. So things you maybe what happens in other countries, why people do what they do, you know, something about history, what happened before you were born. All of these things are interesting. And there's a lot of things about animals. Most kids where I live are very interested in animals. That's why I asked about dinosaurs. Yeah. You were interested in dinosaurs, weren't you? Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there's so many things you can learn about and use the phone for that. And aside from that, put it away.
The reason why I asked is because after coming into contact with Buddhism, I realized the thing about self-awareness.
About
Self-awareness.
yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes when I also get lost in the world of the
Yeah.
internet. But then sometimes, because I suddenly remember about self-awareness, so I catch myself. But
Yeah.
I feel that it's because I'm older now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know how to introduce the concept of self-awareness to the children.
Yeah.
That's why I asked this.
I think it's for adults and kids to just stop before you do something and say, why am I doing this? Yeah, because what you're talking about is when we operate on automatic. Oh, there's something online, I click, and then that has a thing, I can click on that, and then that has another thing, I click on that, and then, what, 5 hours go by? Yeah, and the work you wanted to do, you know, and afterwards, you can't do what you wanted to do, and then afterwards, you're going, what did I really learn from that? Yeah, so if you stop, you know, when you first open your phone, why am I opening it? What is it that I want to see or learn? Do that, put the phone down. Yeah? If you see something, oh, an interesting click that you could make, then just stop. Well, why do I want to click that? Why does that look interesting? And is it really important for me to know that little bit over there? Yeah. And then you can say, no, it's not very important. Don't click, turn the phone off. Yeah. Or you could say, oh yeah, that would be interesting, an interesting follow-up. You learn it. And then at the end of that, you say, okay, I learned that, now finished. Yeah. So to just, ask, you know, why do I want to do this? That's the main thing about self-awareness. Why do I want to do this? You know, what am I feeling? What am I thinking? Yeah, instead of just impulsiveness, an idea comes in our mind and we just act on that idea without even thinking about what are the results of acting on that. Yeah, we tend to be quite impulsive, and then we get ourselves in a lot of jams. Yeah, you know, because there's a lot of scams online now, and especially for kids, you know, to follow this and that, and then, mommy, daddy, you know, please, we can get this toy for a discounted price. Can't we do it? And it's a scam, you know, people taking advantage of kids. So, yeah, so you also have to teach your kids about using, you know, their intelligence to see what makes sense and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And the main thing about teaching your kids about being online is for you to model it. If parents are online all the time, carrying their phone everywhere they go, looking everything up, constantly texting people about things that you really don't need to text about, then if you're doing that, then telling your kids not to do that, that's not going to work. Kids are smart. They look at what mom and dad do, not just what mom and dad say. Yeah, so you have to model that. Or another thing, is to, when you go online, do it, you know, if your kids are interested in something, you go online with them and you look at it together so that you're looking at something together, discussing it, so that your kids are actually talking to you, yeah, and letting you know what they're thinking, what is going on as you're investigating something that they're interested in. Yeah. Yeah, because I think nowadays, parents, what I've observed, because I travel a lot, and in airports, you know, waiting for a plane, the parent is on their phone, the kid's on their phone, or their tablet, or whatever it is. They're not talking to each other. Yeah. And if you don't talk to your kids when they're young, and you know, take an interest in their life and what they're thinking. Then when they become teenagers, they're not going to talk to you and not going to ask you advice. Yeah, because they're not used to that. Yeah. And if they try to, then, you know, you're going to say, oh, I'm busy. Like, you know, because I think parents often give kids screens to look at. You know, it's like, oh, I'm tired. You know, here's your phone. here's the television, amuse yourself. But then you don't establish a relationship with your children. Yeah. And then when they grow up, they're, you know, when they need help, when they need advice, yeah, they won't ask you because they don't know how. Yeah. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because it seems sometimes parents seem like sergeants in the army. Yeah. Okay, wake up. Time to go to school. Wash your face. Brush your teeth. Come eat. Yeah, did you do your homework? No. Why didn't you do your homework? Oh, you can't go out and play this afternoon. Okay, quickly get in the car. We're going to school. Yeah. Okay, have a good day. Bye. Yeah. Parents sound like sergeants in the army. Yeah. I know one family, and they're really good. They have, you know, their children are young, and their dad often is the one who drives them to school. And he'll look at things that they see along the route and talk to them about that. You know, it's like, oh, you know, because they live in an area where there's a lot of trees. Do you know what kind of tree that is? Yeah. Does that tree lose its leaves, or does it grow in the winter, or does it grow in the winter? Yeah. Yeah. Do you know how trees grow? Why do we water trees? Yeah. And so he starts a discussion with the kids about that. And then the kids, you know, they come up with their ideas, and then they're interested in whatever it is and look it up afterwards. Yeah. So, and then when the kids come home from school, you know, how was your day? Yeah. Because as parents, you should know the names of your kids' friends. If you don't know who your kids play with and what they play, yeah. Yeah. Do your parents, does your mom know the names of your friends? Has she met your friends?
Yes, I do.
Should we quiz her? Yeah. Okay. Tell me some of his friends' names.
Aiden, John.
Is she right? Does she know the names of your friends? Yeah.
I know more of her friends because all girls. So I speak better to girls. I don't really understand the world of boys. He's running around.
Yeah. So it's nice when your mom knows your friends, huh? Yeah. It's good. Okay, let's go step back a little bit. This whole thing, the path of Vajrayana. So there's a big misunderstanding in the West, in Singapore, and people think, oh, there's three Buddhist traditions, Vipassana, Zen, and Vajrayana. That's not right, okay? There's two major traditions, yeah? The Theravada and the Mahayana, yeah? To do Mahayana practice, you need to learn a lot of what's taught in the Pali scriptures, okay? You need to know the Four Noble Truths, yeah? What is meant by renunciation? What is the Eightfold Noble Path? You need to understand that. Then, you know, based on that, when you do Mahayana, then you go into more depth about what renunciation is. You go into more depth about how to develop love and compassion for all sentient beings. you go into more depth about selflessness.
Yeah.
And so those topics are the foundation for doing Vajrayana practice. In other words, you need to build the foundation and the walls before you put the roof on. Yeah. So Vajrayana is actually an advanced practice. What it's very often presented as is you sit there and you visualize some deity and you say mantra. That's very nice, but why are you visualizing the deity? Why are you chanting mantra? Okay. Do people know that? Or are they just, well, yeah, oh, mani padme hum, oh, mani. That's nice. That's great. But why are you doing it? Yeah. Our answer shouldn't be because I like the melody. Yeah. Why are you visualizing Chenrezig or Manjushri, Kuan Yin or Wensupusa? Why are you visualizing them? Yeah. So you need to think, yeah, what is the purpose? Which means that you need to have the prelude, you know. Oh, what does it have to do with renunciation? How does visualizing Kuan Yin and saying Kuan Yin's mantra help me develop love and compassion? Yeah. If you don't know the steps on what to meditate on to develop love and compassion, just visualizing Kuan Yin and saying her mantra is nice, but you're not going to really get what it means to have love and compassion for all beings. Okay? So that whole thing needs to be developed. Yeah. For that, yes, you definitely need a teacher. Okay, guru means, actually, the translation is heavy, yeah, meaning heavy in qualities. So we need teachers, yeah. Another way to translate guru is teacher or spiritual mentor, yeah. Somebody who knows more than us, who can be a guide, yeah. And before accepting somebody as your teacher, you need to check them out. Yeah. Do they, you know, in the scriptures, they've written about what are the qualities of good teachers. Yeah. You just got volume Foundation of Buddhist Practice. There's several chapters in there about the teacher, you know, and what kind of qualities you want a teacher to have. You know, are you looking for people who sit on high thrones and wear a lot of brocade and have yellow hats, black hats, red hats? Are you looking for teachers who, you know, give initiations and do pujas where they're talking in a language you don't know and give you holy water and you just sit there? Is that how you're going to learn the Buddha's teachings? So you need to see, you know, what are the teachers teaching and check their qualities. Do they keep good ethical conduct? Yeah. Are they a monastic? If they are a monastic, are they keeping their precepts? Yeah. Yeah. Do they know the Dharma well? Or are they just kind of going around teaching whatever to get donations? Yeah. Are they, do they have compassion? Are they teaching with a motivation of compassion? Because we want teachers with compassion, don't we? And we want teachers with a lot of fortitude and a lot of patience, because sometimes as disciples, we're not such good disciples. And we make a lot of mistakes. So we want teachers who are compassionate, who won't just say, well, you don't give me a lot of donations, goodbye. Yeah. Why is the teacher teaching? Yeah. Do they really have the student's best interest? Or are they, you know, collecting donations? So you need to check that out. Yeah. Then when you have a lot of foundation, yeah, in the general teachings, in the Mahayana teachings, then you can see about empowerments and things. Yeah. And yes, if you practice Vajrayana, yes, you need a guru, a teacher, to become enlightened. Yeah. Do you think you're going to get enlightened in this life? Yeah. Because I thought when I first met the Dharma, you know, and they were saying, you can get enlightened in one lifetime. I thought, good. Okay. Yeah. I want to get enlightened. I'm tired of having so many problems. You know, I want to get enlightened. Okay, so that means I've got to be like Milarepa. You know Milarepa, the Tibetan saint who meditated many years in a cave? Yeah, I'm going to go find a cave. Yeah, it's got to be a nice cave. You know, not Milarepa, you know, out in the cold and the snow. I'm not interested in that. I want a nice, comfortable cave. And I'm going to sit there and do retreat. I'm going to sit cross-legged and meditate. Did I know how to meditate? I knew a little bit. Did I know enough to do a retreat? No. Had I set up a daily practice, a daily meditation practice? No. Yeah. Did I know how to control my mind if anger came up when I'm meditating? No. So fortunately, I had a very good teacher, and he didn't let me go find a cave in the Himalayas and meditate. Yeah. He sent me out to work in Dharma centers. Yeah. Why? Because I needed to accumulate merit. Yeah. And I also needed to receive more teachings and to really have a good idea about, you know, what is the Buddha's path? What is the purpose of the Buddha's path? Where are we heading? What are the steps to take in actualizing that path? Yeah. And so, you know, he sent me out to accumulate merit by offering service in centers and by receiving teachings, because there were geshis and teachers at those centers. Yeah. So I'm very grateful to my teacher for that. Yeah. And my teachers also taught the really hard stuff, which we think is easy, like the disadvantages of attachment, how to work with our anger. How to work with anger? I know how. I scold the other person. I yell at the other person. I tell them they're wrong. Yeah. What did the Buddha say about that? He said, anger is a non-virtuous mental state. If you act out of anger, you're creating negative karma. If you create negative karma, you're going to have the result of suffering. Okay. I better learn about the law of karma and its effects. Yeah? And you learn about that law of karma and its effects and how what we do matters. So you're learning about cause and effect, how the Buddha taught cause and effect. That is very important to learn at the beginning and to keep your mind on it as you progress. You're a scientist. Cause and effect is right up your alley, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, you run your life on some kind of cause and effect. Yeah. Why do you tell your kids to go to school? So they can learn. Why should they learn? so they can have a career? Why should they have a career? So they can support their family. Why should they support their family? Because they care about, you want them to care about other people. Yeah. So caring about other people is very important. Yeah. Love, compassion. Yeah. So that's important. And cause and effect, you know, the law of cause and effect. It's, you know, a system the law of karma is a system of cause and effect. Very important we learn that. And there's a lot of teachings on that. Okay. That probably wasn't the answer you expected. That's okay.
I think it helps me to understand the big picture.
Yeah.
How to love myself eventually.
Exactly. And that big picture is very important. Yeah. Yeah. It's we need a map. Yeah. And we need to have a big picture of the map. Otherwise you say, oh, I want to go to New York. Yeah. Oh, well, I'll just get in my car and ask Siri how to drive to New York. Good luck. Yeah. Can Siri tell you how to drive to New York? No. You need some picture of the continents and where things are in the world and how you go from one place to the other. Yeah. So it's the same in Dharma practice. We need the big picture and the map. And I often people say to me, well, where do I start with in my Dharma practice? What do I do first? Well, you set up a daily practice. What do I meditate on? Yeah. Okay, what is the first thing I have to do? And I tell them, stop being a jerk. What? Are you calling me a jerk? I'm not a jerk. It's the way I get people to pay attention. Because in some ways, we are jerks. Yeah. And in some ways, our behavior is obnoxious. You tell your kids, stop being a brat. Actually, let me tell you, many of us adults are brats. Remember this. Yeah. Many adults act obnoxiously. Yeah. That's why the world is so messed up, you know, because adults don't know how to think correctly. Okay. So, you know, what is a jerk? Yeah. A jerk is somebody who retaliates when somebody harms them. Huh? But I should retaliate. Yeah? Somebody lied about me behind my back. I should retaliate. Yeah? What good is it going to do if you retaliate? I'll get even. I'll feel satisfied. Really? Yeah. How does retaliating to people who harm you or retaliating with people who you're jealous of, how does that help you? Yeah, it just creates more conflict in your mind, more unhappiness, more, it makes your relationships with other people very fraught and very, there's no trust. Yeah, when you're angry and you act out your anger, yeah, we say all sorts of things, mostly to the people we love the most. Yeah, is that true? Who do you say the most awful things to when you're angry? Strangers or the people you love? It's the people you love, isn't it? You would never say to a stranger what you say to the people you love. Why do we say that to the people that we love when it harms the relationship? It harms the trust. Yeah, because a relate, you know, the people we love, you know, trust is the major element in having a happy relationship. Yeah, if you don't trust your spouse, your marriage is going to be difficult. If your spouses are not trustworthy, that's a problem. Same with parents and children. Yeah, you need to educate your children so that you can trust them. And they need to trust you to educate them well. Yeah, and teach them good values. Teach them what to do with their anger. Yeah. When I was little, I got really frustrated. Well, I got really frustrated a lot. But one time, I was so mad because I couldn't put on my skates and I wanted to skate and I couldn't put them on and I just slammed the skates down. I was like 4 or 5 years old. And I started to cry. What did my dad do? He took out the camera and recorded me having a temper tantrum. That was so smart that he did that. Because now they have it on record, me behaving like a brat, having a temper tantrum. Yeah. And what did I have to learn from that? I learned to laugh at myself. Yeah, I learned to laugh at myself. I could have been angry at my dad for filming me having a temper tantrum. But later, after, you know, he didn't show the film right away. But after some time, when I was a little bit more mature, I saw the film and I laughed. It's like, oh, that's so childish. Yeah. So that was something important for me to learn, how to look at my own behavior sometimes and saying, yeah, I'm acting like a child. Okay. But, you know, how do you as an adult, what do when you get angry? Do you just yell and scream? Do you throw things? Do you stomp out of the house and slam the door? Do you go in your room and cry and not talk? How do we handle our anger? Because we're modeling that for the children. Yeah? When we're angry as adults, can we even say, I'm angry. I need a timeout. When your kids are upset, you tell them to take a time out. Yeah, but you need to say, you know, I'm upset right now. I need a time out. I need to be able to just sit, breathe, calm myself down, realize that what just happened is not a national disaster. Yeah, it's not the worst thing in my life. Then you go and you calm down. Then you go back to whoever it was that you had a disagreement about and you discuss it. Yeah, what a good model for your kids.
Well, I try to do a deep practice. I do it for a while and I lose it. And then my solution to that is to just keep trying. So I keep trying and then I get back into it. And then over time, I lose it again. And I've realized over the past 2 years, it's become a cycle where I lose it and then I get back into it. But my goal is to be very disciplined about it, be consistent. I don't really know how to do that because I know over time I'll fall out again. It's a solution to it.
Okay, one thing I think that's very helpful is you probably have a calendar where you write all your appointments. Okay. Write in an appointment with the Buddha. Every day you have an appointment with the Buddha for, you know, 15 minutes, half an hour. You can decide how much time. Yeah. What are you going to do with your appointment with the Buddha? Well, you can sit and do some meditation practice. If you're going to Dharma teachings or listening to Dharma teachings online, you know, make an outline of the important points. And then in your meditation, think about each point and how that point relates to your life. Or during your appointment with the Buddha, read from a Dharma book so that you learn and think about what you read. Don't just turn the pages to get it done and finish it. Go very slowly and think about what you read. But when you have an appointment with the Buddha, you'll do your practice. Because you're not going to stand up the Buddha, are you? Yeah. When you have an appointment with your boss at work, you don't not show up and stand up your boss. That's important. Are you going to stand up the Buddha? Buddha, I have the things that are more important than to learn what you said. I want to gossip with my friends. Is that really more important? Okay. And I think making that time of as a quiet time, you know, where you can learn, you can think. Yeah, it makes you calmer during the rest of your life. Whereas if you're rushing, I got to do this, I got to do this, going here, going there. Yeah, then you get so busy, you stop your practice after a while.
Very scared of ghosts.
Uh-huh. Oh.
I'm not so good at Buddhism, so I don't know a lot about ghosts.
Yeah.
He will always ask, do they really, really exist? Because, like, for example, he doesn't dare to go to the toilet at night.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I try to explain to him in a layman term that, you know, if you don't do anything wrong in your life, there's no need to be afraid. Yeah. Yes, they may exist, but they won't do anything to you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, they may exist, but they're busy doing all their ghost things. Yeah. You know, they have appointments to keep and, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. And you know, if you ever think a ghost is there, instead of getting scared, say, hi, I wish you well. I hope you have a happy life. And if you say that to the ghost feels happy and goes away. Yeah, because ghosts, you know, they don't appear just to harm people. Yeah. They have their own life to live. And they want to be happy. Mm-hmm. You can just say, I wish you happiness.
I was wondering how to be ethical in work life, because sometimes or oftentimes I feel like I have to act in self-interest, so I'm afraid that I don't know the line between being selfish versus trying to move ahead in my career. For instance, if I want to network with someone, I fear that there is a sense of greed in me talking to a person that I want to connect with.
Mm.
There are like fine lines where I feel like, is this too much acting out of greed? But at the same time, it feels necessary. So yeah, I feel a bit confused sometimes.
Yeah. So the motivation is to, what's motivation?
It's usually to land an opportunity at work.
To land an opportunity at work. Is anybody harmed by your landing that opportunity or networking?
In outcome, no, but I think in pursuit of that, maybe I'm harming myself because I might be operating on greed.
Yeah, that's you're the one who knows your motivation. I can't tell you your motivation. You're the one who looks inside and sees, you know. And if it's the motivation is greed, then yeah, what you're putting in your mind stream is you're making more and more of a habit of being greedy. Yeah, and more of a habit of this kind of transactional relationship of you do something for me and I do something for you. But I don't really care about you as a human being, but as long as you do what I want and I get some profit out of it, then that's good enough. So that kind of way of relating to people is, it takes us away from seeing people's humanity and from really thinking that, or not just thinking, realizing that all of us equally want happiness, all of us equally want to be free of pain. Yeah, and that kind of thing is very important, you know, in life, because if we're just going through life, you know, what can I get from this person? What can I get from that person? You might get money, you might get property, but inside, everything's hollow. Yeah. Because I think, you know, we're social animals, and I think we, you know, what gives meaning in our life is when we're able to connect with other living beings and to connect with them with a good motivation, you know, because we care about them, we want to benefit them. So there's nothing wrong with, you know, kind of doing things to get ahead. But you want to moderate the intention, so it's not just, I want this because I want to create an empire, you know. I want to be rich. I want to have a corner office. I want this. I want that. I want the other thing. You know, then the whole value of your life becomes in material things, what you accumulate. But when we die, we can't take any of it with us. Yeah. So what's more important is to really think, you know, why? What's going on inside me? Do I have a kind attitude? Do I appreciate other people's kindness? Do I treat people fairly? Or do I try and get the best deal at their expense? There's one person in Singapore, one businessman. And almost every year I come, he says, how do you do business and be honest at the same time? Yeah. And I always tell him the story of a friend of mine who, Linnea, yeah. So she used to work in Hong Kong for Levi Strauss, and she was an executive, yeah. And what she learned from being an executive is if you treat your customers and your clients fairly, they will come back and do more business, and they will refer their friends. But if you overcharge them and you just treat them like objects, then that's it, they don't come back. Yeah. So I tell this to the businessman because he's thinking, oh, in order to close the deal, I should overcharge somebody, you know, because they won't know it and I'll get more money. And, you know, what she's saying, my friend, is that if you do that, you're actually going to harm your business because people aren't going to come back. Whereas if you charge them a fair price or even give them a discount, then they come back and they refer their friends. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the position of being a manager, if you treat the people under you with kindness and respect, then they'll stay at the company. If you know, and they feel some connection and loyalty. But if you just treat the people that you're managing as worker ants and push them, we got to do this by this date, come on, hurry up, you know, just do it. Why, you should just stay after work and work harder. Come on, you lazy one. If you treat people like that, you know, they're going to burn out and they're going to leave. Makes some sense to you? Yeah. And also in all this is what's important is how you feel about what you're doing. And if you don't feel good about what you're doing, then that's a signal that you need to stop doing that.
What? Root guru.
Root guru.
That's usually the teacher who first inspires you to really set up a Dharma practice. Yeah. And yeah, so you have a good connection with that person. You go back repeatedly for their teachings. You know, you trust them. So if you have questions on the path, then you can go and ask. Yeah, so it's that person. And you can also have more than one teacher. Yeah, it's not limited to one teacher. I have three. Yeah.
So,
you know why? Because I started out with one, and then he sent me, had his teachers come to the monastery and teach us, and I had a really good connection with one of the teachers he came. So I said, that one's also my Rokuro. And then he directed me to study with the Dalai Lama. So I did that. So I consider Dalai Lama my guru. Then I have other gurus, other teachers as well. Because some teachers have many, many students, you know, like the Dalai Lama. So, you know, to have a lot of personal time there is just not possible. But they can still be your teachers, yeah? And then other people have maybe fewer disciples or... you know, there's more opportunity to talk to them and attend the teachings. So that's also perfectly all right.
So what would be someone who you felt very connected to?
Yeah.
Trust entirely.
Yeah. But you don't need to go shopping for a root guru. Yeah. Yeah. You don't go like, okay, who wants to be my root guru? Yeah, file an application here. No. I think it happens kind of just organically. I know for me, I didn't know anything about Buddhism when I started. I saw a sign for a meditation course. I was a teacher, so in the summer I wasn't working. So I went to this meditation course. And these two lamas were teaching. And I listened and I thought about what they said. And I tried to practice what they said. What they said made a lot of sense to me. It answered a lot of my questions about life. And the practices that they did really helped me when I did that. So I just kept going back again and again and again. I didn't know anything about root guru, any of that stuff. I just knew that what these people taught helped me a lot, so I kept going back. Then after a while, I figured out, oh, you know, he must be my teacher. Yeah, I wasn't looking for a teacher, Yeah, and His Holiness always says, you know, when people get like, oh, I gotta find a root guru. He always says, the Buddha is your root guru. Yeah, because all the teachings came from the Buddha. So study what the Buddha said. Okay. Yeah.
Sometimes my kids ask me,
I can't hear you.
clairvoyance? Is there clairvoyance?
Is there clairvoyance? Yeah, there can be clairvoyance. People have clairvoyance in different ways. Some people, they develop single-pointed concentration, and they train to have clairvoyance. It's a training that they do when they have single-pointedness. Yeah. Other people, just out of karma, you know, because of karma, they have some feeling about this and that. That clairvoyance sometimes is good and sometimes is wrong. Yeah. So just because somebody says, oh, I'm clairvoyant. Yeah. And especially people who want to tell you your fortune and tell you things when you didn't even ask. You know. And, you know, it's very interesting because in society, some people really trust the fortune tellers. Yeah. So at one time in the States, there was some kind of fair of, you know, spirituality. And so people asked us to set up one table about the Dharma. So we set up a table with some of the teachings. And on this side, there was a fortune teller. And on that side, there was a fortune teller, both of them claiming to be clairvoyant. So people would come and they would, you know, they would walk along and they stop at the first this fortune teller. You know, they'd pay some money and the fortune teller would say, da, 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 and the person's like this, listening so intently. Why are they listening so intently? Because the fortune teller is talking about me. Well, the fortune teller said this, they said that. Okay, then the session ended. Then they walked past our table, boring, onto the next fortune teller. Same thing, paid their money. Listen. And I'm thinking, wow, here's the Buddha's teachings. The Buddha is omniscient. The Buddha can tell us the path to awakening, the path out of our situation in samsara. And those people aren't interested. They just want to pay some money and have somebody, you know, tell them their fortune. And I felt really kind of that's a sad situation. They're missing out on something, you know. And I found it very interesting afterwards. People would say, well, the fortune teller told me I was going to get sick this year. Well, I can tell you that too. Because don't you get sick every year? Do you go a whole year without getting a cold or the flu or a cough? No, every year we get sick, you know? Hello? Yeah? So somebody's saying you're going to get sick this year. That's no big deal. Yeah? Somebody else who says, oh, something very good is going to happen. You're going to meet somebody. Something very good will happen in your life. Doesn't that happen every year also? You meet new people. You have a new friend. Yeah, they introduce you to some new field of interest, something new you can learn about, or you meet somebody when you're traveling. So, you know, that's nothing special. What the Buddha said is, you know, when you're kind to people and treat people, you know, ethically, then you will experience happiness and they will experience happiness. But if you cheat them, lie about them, talk badly about them behind their back, and just want to milk them for whatever you can get out of them, then you're not going to have good relationships and you're going to be creating a lot of negative karma, which will lead to, you know, misfortune in future lives. Yeah. The Buddha taught that. That makes a lot of sense. Do people pay attention to that? No, I want to hear the fortune teller. It's true, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the important thing, I think, in our lives, you know, this whole awareness of cause and effect in an ethical dimension. Yeah, it's ethical cause and effect. You know, if you're fair and kind, that's what you receive. Yeah, if you take advantage of people, they're going to take advantage of you too. Mm-hmm. Some people say to me, but, yeah, I love this. Yes, but, yeah, you know, I could just charge them a little bit more and benefit a little bit more. And it doesn't really hurt them. They have a lot of money. Yeah, but what's the motivation? Is the motivation one of kindness, wanting to help others, wanting to help their lives be better? Or is the motivation one of just using people for your own benefit? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's what's really important.
I mean, there's a lot of like this teachings and concepts and everything. So some of them look at that, right? We kind of like, makes sense logically, you kind of understand that logically, but how do we bring that from that logical understanding to, how should I say, the perfect understanding, like enlightenment, that kind of thing, I'm sure. It's,
yeah. What we have to do is bring our intellectual knowledge down into our heart. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you start out with the words and the concept and the intellectual knowledge, yeah? And then you think about it. You really think about it. How does that work? Does that make sense? And then you think, how does that relate to my life? Do I live according to that concept? Yeah? So the thing about greed came up. So to, you know, okay, greed, yeah. Are there benefits to greed? Are there disadvantages to greed? Well, one benefit, I get more stuff. Yeah, more possessions, more money, more status. What's the downside of that? Well, at the time I die, I can't take any of it with me. But what do I take with me is the karma that I've created. And in my life, how I feel about myself and my life, that depends on what I do too. Because if I act in a way that is unethical, you know, even if other people praise me, I don't feel good in here. How we feel in here when we're alone with ourselves is much more important than what everybody else thinks about us. Because what people think about us, it's just a thought. It doesn't mean we are that. Yeah? So you really think about it, and then you think, okay, yeah, how am I going to apply that in my life? Well, I'm going to watch my motivation. Why do I do what I do? And how am I treating other people? Okay? So that doesn't mean being a people pleaser. Like, oh, I've got to be kind to everybody. So I rush over here and I help that one. And then I rush over here and I help that one. Then I rush over here. And I'm doing everything to please you and make you happy. Are you happy? Do you like me? Because look at all the nice things I did for you. No, we're not talking about that. Okay. We're talking about really something from your heart. Because you care. Yeah. And then you begin to live it, and it shows in how you live. Mm-hmm. Well, what does it mean that somebody takes advantage of you?
It means that he knows that you are soft-hearted. He knows that you are in him, and he will just put the point and say, you will not care about how you say.
Okay. If you give in, is that harming him in any way by reinforcing his negative behavior?
His negative behavior, yes, I think. Yeah, because I forgive him. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that I'm correcting him.
Yeah.
My brain will tell me that I should correct him.
Yeah.
But because of how he wants it to be, the child still has time to forgive
him. Yeah. It's a thing that, you know, it's hard to talk about in general because every situation is going to be different. And some situations, it's like, okay, somebody's taking advantage of me. It's no big deal. This is really important to him. It's not so important to me. Yeah. Then, you know, you just let the person do. Yeah. But then other situations, you think, you know, I don't trust that person's motivation. And I don't think that him having that motivation helps him, because maybe he'll just continue acting that way with other people and create negativity, negative karma himself, and harm others. In that case, the kind thing to do is to try and correct the person. Yeah. And to say, no, that doesn't seem fair to me to, you know, to do it that way. Yeah. And I think, you know, depending who it is, you know, and I think you need to, you know, learn how to treat people respectfully and fairly. So each situation is very different. So you have to assess that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you notice in both of the examples I gave, none of them was, how can I get the best deal? Yeah. Yeah, I want this, I want this. No. We also sometimes have to look at our heart, too, because sometimes we're quite attached to maybe our reputation, and we want people to think good of us, so we let them do things that it's not so good to let them do. It's kind of like when you're raising a child. Yeah, you love your child. Does that mean that you give your child everything they want? No, because if you do, you're going to have a brat, and you're going to have a person who cannot function in society. So you can, you know, with children, you love them, but you have to say something, you know, and, you know, this is not appropriate behavior in this situation, or, you know, whatever you need to do to teach your child. And so you can correct them, and because you care about them. And granted, sometimes children don't like being corrected. Yeah, they don't like when mom and dad say no. But you realize that as a parent, you have to do that. Really, otherwise the kid just is bouncing, you know. They don't know how to behave with other people. Mm-hmm. You agree?